Can I give you a note?
Yes.
And this is more from like, I have like a weird, I think you know this about me. I have like a weird relationship to
All
like
right.
bathroom humor.
You don't like the potty stuff?
I think when we go on a break, don't say, oh, good, I got to take a leak every time we go on break.
I got plenty of different terms I can use besides leak.
Don't, maybe just don't like leave it up to the listener's imagination
There's
what we're doing.
urination. There's drain the lizard.
I don't think
There's.
like when most radio shows and things like we're like, all right, we'll be back after this.
I'm using the term leak. I'm not using number two
No,
terminology.
but you don't, you even say, oh god, I gotta go take a pee. Like
We're not high art here, Colton.
what is the fudgy McFudge budge? Damn, no,
That's
it's gotta
called
stay
the
that.
number two.
That better not be the outtake. I have to watch you now. Now I don't trust you because you're stuck as stuff.
I have noticed. I was telling somebody the other day. I was like, it's really messed up. I think Colton's like the intellectual. He articulates things so well that I just come in and go like, I have one avenue I can take, and that is be the clown.
I would not call you the clown of this podcast by any stretch.
I appreciate. Well, I have no qualms with being the clown.
Well, I think I'm
I think you're a clown.
the clown. That's the outtake. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. I've already done this. This is the actual one.
What?
I've already did it. I already did a test report. So this
Oh
is
no,
the
I get that. I thought,
okay.
okay, all right. Welcome. Welcome everybody
Welcome.
to another installment of your favorite two music critics, air quotations.
Well, which part?
Welcome, air quotations.
The dangling modifier there. I don't know
Yeah.
what part of that we're meant to be. Are we, is this a video cast?
I don't think so.
Okay, thank God. I actually, this is me kind of prepared for a video cast, just so you're clear.
It was a concept I had in my head. Maybe for, because this, I don't think this would be, this isn't the year, the 1 year.
No, maybe for that one. I'll
Yeah.
wear a suit and tie.
There you go. Yeah.
All
I like this. I like
right.
this idea of you and I like
Well,
really dolling ourselves up.
welcome everybody. I guess this is like one of those things where do we date this or not? I feel like we have to. This is the day we're recording an hour early because this is the day of the Super Bowl.
It is. That's why I'm wearing my Rams beanie.
And I prepared this, Rob, and you can help me out in post. I know for a fact that they are going to
One.
win. Yeah,
Well,
they did.
it's basically I have no horse in the race.
Yeah.
I really don't like either team. As a Rams fan, I hate the Niners. And having a soft spot in my heart for the Raiders, I really don't like the Chiefs. But
You
basically,
believe though that the one by a score of like I just think that was insane that it was that.
all right. All right. So you want me to do this in post-production? You want me to do an impression of you going, Chiefs? Niners?
It would
That's
be good. It
you
would
have a
be.
higher pitch voice than me, so that I have to
Is
go a
that
little.
your impression of me?
Is that your impression of me?
Hey, I'm Rob. Wait, no, I can't do Rob.
You
I
can't
make you
get that low.
sound. I don't know why my Rob sounds that way.
But honestly, my choice in the only reason I'm rooting for the Chiefs is because I want to be right in my prediction. Everybody who's asked me, I just go like, if I was a gambling man, the Chiefs probably got it.
I always get interested in all the prop bets for every Super Bowl because like there's the one about like how long the national anthem will be and it's Reba McEntire, so
Yeah.
I imagine it's going to be shorter because she doesn't hold out notes. She's a
I agree.
great vocalist, but
Oh, I love Reba. I really do. But
Reba.
what do you think Usher's going to open with?
That's okay. So,
I'm going, yeah.
I mean, okay. I talked to my wife about this, and we both agreed. Yeah, would you like? That's his biggest single. Right.
Of
Yeah,
course.
is. And I don't know if he would open that. because I feel like that's the centerpiece. Like, I don't think it gets any better. And what are other singles by Usher that he's going to fill up this halftime with? My Way?
My Way could be one. I don't think he's going to do anything off of Confessions 1, right?
Okay, don't you think? Like, he should open with... Oh, wait, what'd you say? Put that on everything. No, I got to call you back. I got to call you back.
And just to say, I really do love Confessions. I think that's a pretty solid album.
It's a great, and that track is good, but it's also like, it's the same reason like Robin Thicke, like guys who cheat on their spouses or partners, and then they make a record and like a song about them cheating, and that song makes a bunch of money. I feel like that is such a slimy thing, posed as them being really like reflective and great. And it's a great song. I can't lie about that. But it's also like, okay, buddy.
And if I'm not, that is the name of the album, right?
Confessions, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because that has a one song. I can't remember the title of it right now, but it had Chili from TLC.
And that's who he cheated on.
Makes sense.
Because he was with Chili.
She showed up in the damn video, so apparently she forgave him.
You know, I don't know what to say. I don't have any like Usher hate. I think
me either.
But I also don't have any Usher like enthusiasm. Like I'm like Usher.
I have heard that he's kind of an arrogant dick.
From or who said that?
Well, I listened to 710 ESPN Radio, and there are a lot of people on there who said when they met Usher, he was kind of rude.
I don't know. I don't know what his accomplishments are that could lead to that. But there we are, everybody. Also, thank you to Bass Blown Entertainment.
Yes,
for this podcast.
That's right.
Thank you to you, Rob. Just hello.
Why
you
are
look
we doing?
Good.
Thank you. You too, man.
I just I feel I'm in a thankful mood. I feel like I have a lot of gratitude this morning.
You know, I'll reciprocate. You look fine.
This is also very on brand, I have to tell you. If I sound sluggish right now, it's because us doing this an hour earlier means I am literally just leaving the brunch table where I had two huge pancakes and a frittata.
I understand. I finally did the math on why is it every time before a podcast episode, I feel like sluggish. I feel a little slow. I feel like my brain's a little foggy. Like, oh, it's because every Saturday I do a pool tournament in the afternoon and then band practice in the evening. And so naturally I have a couple of drinks to kind of get loosey goosey, feel good. And then the next morning I'm like, I'm a little hungover. That's what's going on. Okay.
So I have a brunch hangover and Rob has a hangover. And we're here to bring you all that's good in music and songwriting.
That's right.
So should we get going with our songs of the week?
Just give me one second. I'm going to take off the beanie because I can hardly hear you. This is like really cutting off the audio.
Oh,
go Rams.
Oh, look at that hair. It's good hair.
All right. Yeah, there we go. I can hear a lot clearer.
So I'll go ahead and go first just because we're singing my song when we first logged in today. Here's the thing. Like if you've never heard Paul Simon's Graceland, which was released in 1986, that means it's older than me. I think it's a year older than you.
Mm-hmm.
And that album holds up. That album's amazing. And like that's not me having a controversial opinion. That's like a pretty widely held opinion.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Great album. But
well, I was gonna. Does it have 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover? I doubt it does, but that's my Paul Simon jam.
It does not, I believe.
Well, then it's not that good an album.
I am not like a huge Paul Simon, like
no.
aficionado.
No, I got you. I'm more Simon and Garfunkel.
I'm not though. I think I used to think that because I just hadn't heard enough Paul Simon solo stuff. But the more I hear Paul Simon stuff after they broke up, I was like, no. I can't. I guess it's just him totally. He was getting held down, man. Garfunkel was.
Garfunkel's got a pretty voice.
Well, that it doesn't.
But
that's totally on
Paul
brand.
Paul Simon
for me.
Would definitely agree with you. I can that's say right. that much.
I think it's very on brand for me to say that the voice is not as important to me. But
I get that.
If you heard me sing, you understand that. But the song is "You Can Call Me Al." Did you? I know you didn't watch the video, but the video is great.
Well, I was going to ask you why you chose Ador. I'm like, is it like Chevy Chase? You just wanted to give him some love?
I do love Chevy Chase. I think he's great. But
I've
it's
had some
more,
debates over this, but nothing against Chevy Chase.
But I think because people like Community, they don't like him, and he's
I
he's
want
got
Bill
some
Murray.
Bad things.
When it comes to like the SNL days, I'm glad that
Chevy
Bill Murray
Chase is better than Bill Murray.
No, he's not.
I'm but sorry.
I've had this debate, and I'm kind of
listeners,
tired of it.
Who is better, Bill
Oh, yeah,
Murray?
Please email us,
Chevy Chase. Email us with your opinion.
What's the email, Colton?
No.your.writes.
WRITES.
Podcast.
I don't know why I went Yogi the Bear with that.
Hey.
I don't even know if that's Yogi. I can't do impressions, everybody.
We're coming in hot with a bunch of voices today.
By the way, if you hear me coughing or like sniffling, I'm kind of getting over a cold. Mm-hmm. Yet again, somehow, for the last decade, I haven't gotten sick. And this winter, I'm blaming Know Your Rights. This winter, I've gotten sick. This is the third time.
I keep coughing into the mic. I apologize for that.
I don't know if you were. I feel like I'm kind of taking over your song choice here, but I don't know if you remember why I chose Facing New York. It was because I wanted to focus on recording.
Uh-huh.
And I got a flipping cold. And I couldn't record anything. I couldn't even go over and record guitar. I couldn't record vocals. So I didn't even get anything done.
Well, this was good then. This was good.
So call me out. Call me out.
You can call me out. It's so. Did you like it?
I love the song. I just was curious as to why you chose it.
I listen to that song with my wife while we're just doing things.
Gotcha.
We listen to Graceland. Not often, but more often than I listen to a lot of other things. And like instrumentalists, right? All of that like African pop background, that whole record is so cool anyway. But also, like, they've read those lyrics. They're amazing. Like, it's one of those things where you can pass that song off now. It's like, oh, it's kind of like cheesy 80s stuff. Man, it's so great. And it's like the way that he like just throws in this wordplay that when I hear it, I'm just like, shit, he's good all the time.
What's
like, talking
the song
about,
about?
Well, it's the whole chorus, right? I'll call you Betty and call me out. That whole thing is they went, him and his, I think at the time, partner, went to some party. And some guy who I think it was a composer or something, like actually called them Betty and Al. Like he did, either didn't know their names or he forgot their names. And I think that's just kind of a thing that stuck into him. But essentially the first two verses at least are like midlife crisis, right? Why am I so soft in the middle? Why is the middle so soft? Like the belly, but also it's like life. Why does life feel so soft? Right? It's in all these like bits of like kind of not knowing who you are. But then in the third verse, it's him going to Africa, which is what inspires him to make Graceland, right? So it's like kind of all three, like these different versions of losing your sense of identity. It's, I don't know, man. It's just so beautiful the way he wields it all together. And I'm just, I think we're maybe in agreement here. I'm a You Can Call Me Al time of my life. And that was the only thing listening to Face in New York, I have to say. Listening to Get Hot, I was like, man, I am not in my 20s anymore because I don't identify with anything. And at the time, I really did. But when I listen to You Can Call Me Al, I'm like, I've officially reached the You Can Call Me Al part of my life.
Dancing in the kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's basically for me when I hear You Can Call Me Al, I'm not looking for anything deep. I'm not looking for anything soulful or like something that's really going to move me. When I listen to that song, I'm gonna kind of like shimmy my shoulders and dance a little bit, or like, you know, but hum to myself. You can call me.
Yeah. But that's the magic of Paul Simon. He gives you both, because if you look at it, it is, and the lyrical depth is, it's just amazing.
He's a pretty good lyricist. We've talked about this in previous episodes.
And to be clear, when I made the joke that I was a better lyricist than Paul Simon,
he wasn't joking.
Was a joke. That was a joke.
He was dead serious. He shot me a text message right after. It's well, like, his wife shot me a text right after. And I'm like, Colton means
signed by me. That's how we text now. Is I just text you through my wife's phone and I sign it, Colton.
It was funny. One of the texts I got was no, I posted it - Colton.
To be clear.
But
oh my god. So
speaking
yeah.
of previous episodes, have I suggested this song before?
No, you have not.
I haven't. Okay, I wasn't sure. Because
is this because you watched the Grammys? and you were so struck by Jack Antonoff winning producer of the year?
No, I didn't even know. I don't know the name of anybody in Steel Train.
That's so amazing. Okay, keep yeah. you so share your song and artist, please.
So my song is I've got to let you go.
I've let you go.
I've let you go. Yeah, I always forget the title. I listen to the song very regularly, but song titles, names and dates, everybody, those are my weaknesses. Just
names, dates, song titles.
If you go back to my high school days, you would see why I got my particular grades. Names and dates just don't stick with me. The event will. But the reason I chose the song is when I first heard of Facing New York, you remember when there were CDR and CDRW blank CDs?
Yeah.
So CDRW, you could put a buttload of songs on it. It could be MP3s and just like computers could read it.
Right.
And so a buddy of mine gave me it because he was just like, I got all these different bands I wanted you to check out. And Facing New York was one of them. That's how I kind of came into it. And the only other song I can really remember that struck me off of that CDRW was Steel Train. It was off the album Trampoline, which I don't really care for the album, but that song has such a cool, it's got like a little bit of a Radiohead quality to it.
Yeah.
And then, but just the entire structure, it's like, it's Radiohead, but like more bubbly Radiohead.
Yeah, I get that part of it. I was gonna ask you, because I don't think you and I have ever talked about Steel Train. We talk about him a lot. He's a good guy and he's our friend. But Alex, I know, was a big Steel Train fan, or I think he was.
Was he? Okay.
He always mentioned it to me. But so the lead singer
birthday
of Steel
dad,
Train,
by the way, everybody.
Birthday dad, of course.
Go and check him out.
The lead singer of Steel Train was Jack Antonoff, who's the guy who did Fun.
I think he still is.
What's that?
You said was.
Well, because they're not around anymore.
Well, but he still is that person. He's still Jack. I know. I know. I know.
You are the clown of this podcast.
I've told you, man. I have to do the nonsensical stuff. Sorry.
But so, and then he's like that big producer now who like he works with Taylor Swift all the time, and he just won. Like,
okay.
He
okay.
produced all these recent Swift albums and all that. And now he's just his own solo career.
Well, I knew there was a reason.
But I don't really like him that much.
That's fair. What did you think of this?
Oh, the song I think was good. Like, I'm not a huge, like you, I'm not a huge Steel Train fan. I think it's
crazy.
Okay,
yeah, you said like me. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's crazy that this is 2007. This is Drive Thru Records. And if I think about all the bands that were on Drive Thru Records in 2007, a lot of those are bands that are like, at the time, I really loved. It's crazy that Jack Antonoff is by far the most successful of any of them.
I had no idea. That's
a
bummer.
I don't see him as being a particularly deep talent, but he definitely has a sound and he definitely knows how to get people to sound that way. So that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea how they wrote the song. So let's just both believe that the rest of the band made him sound better.
But my favorite thing he's ever been a part of is that first Fun record. Aim and Ignite. But
I gotta say, that Fun hit, what was it,
you're probably thinking of We Are Young.
Yeah, that's a good song.
Well, it's Clayton Kershaw's walk-up song.
That's
one more year, baby.
Two more years.
He has the option, but I mean people want it so he could be on this. Sorry, everybody, a little sports talk, we're done.
No, I'm not. Kersh is probably not going for that second year. I have a feeling this is his last year.
Just get him on the roster.
Unless he wants to be on the same pitching staff as Shohei.
That's what people are watering at the mouth about, is if he can be on. God, I mean,
I really can't wait. I can't wait for the Super Bowl to be over.
I said this to my wife today. I said, I'm kind of like, I'm over football. I'm definitely over basketball. I just want baseball. Spring training to start.
There's a glimmer of hope in my, you know, purple and yellow glasses. I'm just like, no, the Lakers can still do it.
People, this is what you get. You get our insights about the music we love, but we love
sports too.
Colby hates it now.
Actually, I think you have a little bit of that. Like, it's broken your heart too many times.
I was just expecting like just waves of admiration from people, and also, yeah, I kind of can't deal with it anymore.
It's tough. It's tough.
Oh my God. So let's do this then, my friend. Let's take a break. Whatever we do during this break is our business. and we'll let Leo or whoever else is going to do this commercial take it away.
I'm going to go handle my business. Told you. I have different ways of saying this. All right, Colton, I will see you on the other side. Leo, take it away.
I set it up already. You don't have to set it up.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseblown Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
All right, we're back, everybody.
Yes.
We've done whatever business we had to do.
Why do you want to keep going down this avenue?
I don't want to.
You're just, like, enticing me.
Hey, what book is that? Is that Call of the Wild? No,
Call of the Game. It's from like two famous announcers, and it's them talking about I haven't read it. I've just read the back of the book. Any book that I have on a shelf means that I haven't read it. Once I read a book, I get rid of it.
Oh man.
How often do you reread a book?
There's a few. I am not a big rereader.
Yeah.
I do end up having to reread things because I teach them. And so
that's fair. That's
every
fair.
Now and then I have to, but never like on a, there's only a couple I think I've read multiple times just because I love them so much.
Yeah. Typically I'm one and done. And then if I really, really like get the itch to kind of revamp my knowledge of the book, I go to Wikipedia, I read the plot and I'm like, oh yeah, that is what happened.
That's the deal.
Cool. I just read a couple paragraphs and I've, you know,
oh man. So you've already kind of answered this because I was going to ask you your way into Facing New York, but this is like, we both have a history with this band, but by far, am I right in saying this? Like at least top five, this is one of your top five favorite bands.
Yeah. Impactful for sure.
Impactful.
When it comes to like My Friend Sam, there's, and really just how I write music. They really, really taught me some things. And one of the big ones that I always like to go to is I can't remember the song off the top of my head by Facing New York, but there was a song that I just found it to be, oh, it's No, which is not on any of these three albums. I think it's off of Swimming Not Treading.
Mm-hmm. And that EP, right?
Yeah, typically listeners, we don't really go into EPs or splits, but No, it was such a fascinating moment to where they did the three bars. Or to where basically, like, you know, like, say you take a chord progression of, like, playing the 1-4-5-1, mm-hmm. and then you repeat. They, instead of going back to the 1 and making that the fourth measure, they made that the first measure again. Mm. This may be a little jarring for anybody who's not familiar with this terminology, but I fell in love with that approach to where if you're going to have a typical chord progression like that, instead of making that 1 drag on for another measure and then begin another four measures, it's like just do the 3 and then make the 1 begin another 3. It's a little complicated, but I like the idea of the rhythmic quality to it, and that's Facing New York anyway.
And that's what I think of when I think of them is, and you know, in their earlier shows when they had I think all their members and they had like the second drum piece up there, and
oh yeah, where it's the ride cymbal and they base the two drum sets off of the ride,
kind of facing each other. And I think I think of you a lot, which just makes sense because I knew they were really influential for you. Mm-hmm. When I think of they are like a progressive rock band, like I think that they earn that progressive. Sure. I think and all three, I think of that first record especially, but when you think of like the traditional progressive rock band that was like, you know, they were touring with Coheed,
yeah.
And other bands like that, I always think of like a lot of notes, like time signature or funky time signatures and really longer songs, lots of different parts. But I think what's interesting with Facing New York is they're primarily a lot of chords, right?
It's a decent amount of chords. I always viewed it more, especially in the first album. I think there's a decent amount of chords, but as they progress throughout the three records, it's really just time signature. And that's what I'm more fascinated. They have songs where it's a 4-4. Like if you really just count it, it's 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. But where they accent the chord is on the ands or the one, like not even on the ands, on the 1E, you know, like the 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E. They'll do it on the 1E, and the E will be there where they hit. For some listeners, this may not make sense, but it's...
People wanted us to get technical. I think with Based in New York, that's the way to appreciate them the most, is that we've talked about bands where we've said things like the Arctic Monkeys, whether or not we think they're all like just crazy experts at their instrument. No, but they play so well together. I think with Based in New York, they're all just so technically amazing, but they're not just like shredding in your face and or that. It's the way, it's still the way they interplay with one another, but they do it in such interesting ways.
Oh yeah. And I mean, we actually opened for Faces in New York at one point in time. And I remember the first thing the guy said, I can't remember, something Frederick. I'm not really good with, again, names.
Eric Frederick is the front man.
Yeah. Yeah. Where he came up to the mic and he's like, we're not going to do as many solos as the previous act. And I don't know how I should have taken that, but I was also a very big fanboy.
I remember him saying that. I think that was self-deprecation.
I think so too. I don't think he was going after me, but
because also I've listened to that self-titled again. There's tons of solos in that record.
There is, but not the way I was soloing.
And they're not the, you know.
Yeah, they're not doing, it's not the, this is clearly a guitar solo. It's just like, there's a lot of riffing. That's how I would put it.
I think that you're kind of bearing the lead, but it also makes perfect sense. Like, we're like, we opened for Faced in New York. We opened for Cursive.
Sure.
I mean, I think when we were opening, we would tell people, we're opening for Faced in New York. And they'd go, who? Because we were so ecstatic that this was going to happen. And then also it was like, oh, and Cursive. We're also opening for them.
I'll never forget you calling me. It was me and a buddy of mine. We were looking for live shows to check out for Faced in New York. And maybe I'm just kind of trying to make this a little more like movie-esque, or like trying to tell a cooler story. But my memory is telling me that you called me while we were looking for it. And you're like, you're never going to guess who is also opening up for Cursive. And I just looked at my buddy and went like, stop looking, man. Come see me and then face in New York. It's going to be incredible.
It was, I think it's easy to say that is for either of us the biggest show we've ever played.
It's the most important one to me. That's the one that I look back on the most fondly.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I also am so grateful it happened at the age that we were, because I think we were all too excited to be nervous. I think if I'm playing that same show at the age I am now, I am terrified and like paralyzed to play.
To an extent. Yeah. I would definitely put on a front. I would have to constantly remind myself because I was very embarrassingly a fan of Faced in New York and all my interactions with them, man.
But I think here's the thing. I remember like us talking to them after. I mean, we weren't, by the way, everybody, we opened for them, but there were definite tears here. And well-deserved. Like, we were in a separate room. I think we got pizza. I don't remember.
There was pizza. I remember Skittles.
We had Skittles, but it's not like we were at backstage hanging out with them guys.
We weren't with Cursive, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, we weren't gonna. But we did talk to Faced in New York after, and they were really nice. I remember
They were really nice, but again, I'm just self-deprecation. I can remember standing there with it was either the bass player or the drummer, and he's just trying to trying to sell CDs at the exit. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing there going like, it's really good. You guys should really check it out. And I don't think that was a flattering moment for Rob McGregor. I think the guy probably remembered that. It's like, yeah, there was this one weirdo who just kept standing there saying how good the frickin' music is.
Well, I can talk to you though, because that same show, Cursive did their sound check last. And Tim Casher, who at the time was one of my favorite songwriters, like top five, because Domestika is still one of my favorite records of all time.
Good album.
Love Domestika. And we did our sound check right after theirs, because we were basically just going to keep all our stuff up. Mm-hmm. And so Tim Casher is the only other guy on the stage when I'm moving my drum set up, and he's like putting chords away. And I go up to just say hello, and I'm like, oh, hi, Tim. He's like, oh, yeah, I know you from somewhere, right? And I go, no, Tim, I don't think you do. I kept saying his name in a weird way. And I was like, and you're Tim Casher. And he's, yeah, I'm Tim. It was, I don't like
the, that
the
makes
whole,
me feel really good, actually. Yeah.
The whole idea, right, of when you're a smaller band or something is this mentality of like, act like you've been there before. I don't think any of us act
no,
like
I didn't even kind of
like not even a little bit.
Yeah, my brain went into you haven't been here before. What do you mean, act? But I only talked to him for a split second because I just remember the Cursive show ran really long. And I'm sorry, everybody. I know we're talking about one particular show, but I just remember they played forever.
Yeah.
And so when he came out, because they were still in the middle of an encore and I was in the back of the hub and I was like having a smoke. And
the hub was the venue, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he comes running out and apparently he was like in a mad dash. And I was just like, hey, good set so far. And I think to him, that was a compliment. But in my mind, because I wasn't a huge Cursive fan at that time, it was really like, the fuck, man, it's been forever. You've been
what
up
a go
there.
Ho.
Yes, you've been up there a really long time. And my favorite Cursive song, I don't think they played that night because I don't think it was written at that point.
Well, they had just put out Happy Hollow, and that was the record, which, not looking back, I think, well, that's like one of the worst ones. But yeah.
But I mean, whenever we do a Cursive episode, my favorite song is
well, don't give it away.
I know, but I want to. I want my memory to work. All right, I won't give it away.
Yeah, your memory won't allow you to root. But I think us talking about it makes sense because I think for all those reasons, Face New York, and expect in our friend group at the time, yeah, like Get Hot especially, like everyone was going crazy about that record. I don't know how big it was nationally, but
at that point, this was pre Get Hot. Yeah,
that's what I couldn't remember. So when we played with them, they saw Matthew Fozzie and all those guys.
Yeah, yeah, and they did Man Up from Get Hot. The only reason I remember it is because I remember being kind of blown away at the two vocalists doing the hey.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought it was such a cool live dynamic. They crushed it. They were the best performers that night. And just one little side story.
Go ahead.
After they finished, I was out front of the hub and I was talking with some guy and I was like, Did you see Face in the Eye? He was like, yeah, they were really good. Definitely better than the first band. I don't know what the first, and I just put my hand up like, stop. I was in that first band. And the guy's like, oh, well, I only caught the last song. I don't know what was going on. And I don't know if you remember, but Rob Hermanson, welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
He just came up and recited some lines from a book.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't even. I think he just talked. And I don't know what he said. To this day, I don't know what he said. We just wanted to do our jam for Toronto, which was our kind of end song.
Yeah.
And I think this was like the night, again, because we were all so, you and I are both very much better songwriters. Sense right from the time that we were doing those songs. I Hopefully. Still believe in half those songs.
Yeah,
we also had very poor decision making in moments where we probably could have exercised them. But Rob, you did a great job.
Thanks. You too, man.
And also Herman said you did a good job.
Oh, you were talking 1B. Okay.
Because I didn't want to be like, oh, Rob Herman said you ruined our set. But I also remember, well, I guess I can't stop talking about this. I was our bassist at the time. Was like, oh, I have a Spider-Man t-shirt on. And I'm going to, at the beginning of the set, I'm going to take off my sweater and go Spider-Tom. And he was obsessed with doing this. And I think both of us, and I even more so, I was like, don't do this.
Well, you had to stay there. Like, Tom and I got to go home. This was where you lived.
And also it's
UCSB,
just,
everybody.
Yeah, it's just if we wanted to pretend like we'd been anywhere, or if we wanted to get in any sort of good graciousness with the people, that would not be the way to do it. And then he did it exactly how he described it, and it was exactly what I thought, which was a lot of faces in the crowd going, "What is going on?"
So basically, the three of us really messed up this golden opportunity to get in with Cursive or Face in New York.
I disagree. I think it was a great show. I have nothing but good memories of that. Because it's still bananas that we played with them.
And the band that played second during that show was Facing New York.
Yeah, that's right. So
wonderful artist.
I was so like listening to those three.
Mm-hmm.
They're all so vastly different. That's the thing. Like, and we just talked about this with Arctic Monkeys, where mm-hmm. the change, and some of that is because the lineup changes drastically, and it just sounds like their approach to writing songs changes from that, and I would say for the better. I don't know what you would say.
I the best I can say is I applaud the fact that when we're talking Arctic Monkeys, that was what, seven albums?
Yeah.
Facing New York did it on three. You know, and they showed growth, and it, I don't even know if it's necessarily growth, because in my mind they were always like Berkeley music graduates, even though I don't know if that's factual, because it's really hard to look up information on Face in New York.
Well, I do know. Yeah, I think they went to some form of music school, and they're from the Bay. They're
yeah,
from.
They,
I mean,
they pretty
talk
much
about
put
nothing but Oakland and
yeah,
Berkeley.
Bay Area. Yeah. So in my mind, they've always been just top tier musicians. Anyway, those three albums kind of showcase it to me. They just show that they have like all these different hats they can wear, and they can wear them really well.
I think there's I okay. I thought this over the course of all three at different points.
Okay.
Like what I've come to think of with Based in New York is they are the best version of what I was talking about with you with the Minus the Bear. And I brought them up. We both, I think, brought them up with the Minus the Bear episode, which if you
I
haven't
know they've
listened
been
to
mentioned. Yeah.
Was a contentious. I'm going to not use that
There
word
we
again.
go.
I don't want us to
Let's
get wrapped
go
into that episode, that word again.
A cantankerous.
Hey, I like that. My critique of Minus the Bear was musically, they always have things that I think are really interesting. But in terms of the subject matter of like the lyrics and the actual content of the lyrics, it feels like such an afterthought to like, let's throw something on top of this music we've done and in ways that I just didn't think were ever really well done. I think this. The same thing applies with Based in New York, especially in that first record where I think the music is crafted, and I could be wrong, but it just feels like the music is crafted first in these really amazing and intricate ways. And whatever the song's about and whatever, it just feels like they take it, you know, go into a back room and like write on a notepad, like, okay, now let's figure out what we can write about with this. And I think it's, you can tell at different points in their career to me, that happens. Like, I don't think he intended on Hail Mary from the beginning. He's like, oh, I'm going to write the song about a touch football game.
Yeah.
I
think he had the riff in his mind and then things, but it's very Paul Simon.
But, and so here's the thing is I think at different levels, those songs still work really well, even though they're goofy. And I think lyrically, they're not always very great, but
are you
I
talking
think,
specifically Dogtown?
No, across all three. I think
across all three. Gotcha.
There's somewhere I could find this, but I still think that applies to Face in New York. Like they're not a band where I think they are thinking about the entire song as a whole. I think certain parts, but it's still rather piecemeal, like with the lyrics. And I think it still works sometimes, but I also, if I was going to give them something like a reservation, that's the thing I've found out this listen through that I didn't hear before.
Yeah. I mean, I lyrically, I would find that to be the weakest link. To be honest, I got to go back to it. And again, Eric Frederick, I have nothing against you. And I think I'm one of the similar type of vocalists. And I love Jeff Rickley. It breaks my heart that they're not as big a band, but his voice is not obviously good.
And yeah.
It's not an insult. It really is not an insult, but it's just something to where you take your casual music listener, they're more than likely not going to be impressed. Because vocals are going to be the first thing that kind of pop. Well, maybe not with all Face in New York. I mean, there's got to be moments where it's like, oh, this musical composition is incredible.
Yeah.
But I would say it's probably the vocals are the deterrent from how famous they could have possibly been.
I think because everything else, like you said, is so strong in terms of like musically and sonically.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the last two, Get Hot and Dogtown, to me at least, they find as a band like ways to accent that and like appeal to it.
Sure.
It's not like with Thursday, where by the last record, they're just dousing his voice in effects.
Exactly. That's something I very much so respect. And there's a little bit of effects on Dogtown, but it's not absurd.
No, I agree with that. I think it's, I think it's more, man, he sounds a lot like Sheryl Crow on the Dogtown. Does he not? Like
a little,
certain songs? I'm like, that's just, or Alanis Morissette. Like there's so much 90s alt rock, like alt radio vibes to
Dogtown. I can definitely hear it.
Yeah. So should we, let's get going on categories.
Categories. Let's do it.
Best song. Do you want to take this? This is your baby.
Yeah. I'll start it off. It's kind of a two-parter, but I'll try to, it should be a two-parter, should I say, but the best song is Styrofoam Walls.
Okay. I knew this was your MySpace song.
Oh,
for as long as you had a MySpace profile, I think Styrofoam Walls was the song. If listener, you remember this, your MySpace song was what defined you in high school.
Very true. Yeah.
And yeah, go for it.
But it's a wonderful. I love how chaotic it is. It starts with just the scream. I think it follows Tip of the Iceberg, which Tip of the Iceberg is like a really gentle song and just low soothing.
Acoustic, yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden it's just and it's like that and all of a sudden you're just inundated by this swirling freaking keyboard effect going around you. Yeah. It's wonderful.
It's,
it's so chaotic, and then it just like hits like a little like brief little like, and the keys are still kind of running the show.
Mm-hmm.
But man, the main reason is it has one of my favorite moments of probably any song I've ever heard. But when it hits that big doom doom. That's the part that's playing right now. You may not have heard the snare hit, but that's what's playing right now, is that humongous. The whole song has been chaotic, and then it hits this just beautiful, like, orchestral. And it's not an orchestra. It's them on their guitars. It's them, him on drums. It's him on freaking bass. It's yeah. So beautiful. And yes,
is that when it turns into the major? Like
it sounds like it kind of transitions to a major, like, but it's really more. It's not so much the scale shift or anything like that, or like focusing on which chord you're playing. It's just how clean it comes out of such a chaotic song and an up and down song that it hits this moment, and it's like the best resolution to everything you have heard before or had heard before in this song.
Yeah.
And then I have to do a forward slash fly on the wall because it's the companion piece.
That triptych at the end, those all three of those, the way that they work with each other is really great.
It's a wonderful outro to an album that I may or may not have really good things to say about later.
Oh, buddy.
But yeah, that song. And what do you think of that song?
I mean, here's the thing. That first record and that, like, the larger band of Facing New York is not my favorite iteration, because I found things to like about them after the fact, like starting with Get Hot when they were a three piece, which I don't know. That's also, I think, just more in line with my ethos of like doing as much as you can with a little. And I think when they had like that six members at one point,
I want to say it was five, because I think the two that dropped off were Matt Fozzi
and the keyboardist
Renee something. I know it's Renee. Right. But and he makes that song. He's really the driving factor.
He's all over that record.
The entire record, for sure.
Yeah.
But I just love it.
I think that is my favorite song on that record, for sure.
I would have guessed Tip of the Iceberg, because that is a more minimalistic.
I didn't like Tip of the Iceberg.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'll talk to you later.
Too saccharine for me. That's the thing, is I think that Styrofoam Walls is like the best version of that. What they were trying to be on that record, and I think like the lyrics work really nicely with everything. Mm-hmm. It is
prog rock
at that
the,
time.
But I love the fact that he's using like styrofoam. He's a fly on the wall in a house made of glass. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if I took any direct message from it, but I just love the playfulness of those little components. You know,
and I think that's the thing that works the best with it, is when it's able to feel like abstracted.
Mm-hmm.
And not too concrete, because if you have prog music and you couple it with really concrete, straight ahead lyrics, it never works.
It's hard to make work, that's for sure.
I can't think of a song that makes it work. And I think like another band
we haven't talked
about
Tool that much, but some earlier Tool stuff, I think it works really effing well, Colton.
That's coming. Fear Inoculum, everybody.
Not Fear Inoculum, for God's sakes. All right.
But we have to throw that. And now I get to mention Tool and bands mentioned in this episode again, which is exciting for me.
Of course.
But another band I think
that's in parentheses, is of course.
Yeah. It around the same time that Facing New York has that first record with Circus Survive. And I think it was kind of a similar thing. Like Anthony Green, Truth Time, is like not a good lyricist, right? But
On Juturna, not phenomenal. I think he followed it up with a little better lyrics.
There have been some good songs he's written, for sure, but I would not categorize that as not why he's known, and it's not, I think, why, I don't know. Anywho, I'm gonna get on
track. I actually really like this dynamic of you and I, like, when we're talking about Facing New York, they're so ingrained in a particular time frame of our life.
That's exactly
that we can't
it.
Help but bring up other artists that were also ingrained in our life.
Well, I think we were both at the time, everything we loved, all the bands we loved were bands that were trying to push different envelopes. And it was all under that category of like progressive rock, proggy, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But it was just bands that we felt were living on this edge of like, I don't know, because in Lancaster where we lived, it was nothing but hardcore.
It was.
And that's
a
all
lot
we
of
played
hardcore.
With. Or pop punk, right?
Yeah.
Like bad pop punk bands. And like you're one of the two. And we were. You know,
I think we felt like we identified as songwriters. I think you and I felt like we were identifying more with Circus Survive, a Facing New York, you know, where we wanted to be. We could play with the hardcore bands. We could play with the pop punk bands, but we're going to do something a little more unique, a little more. Unique. Fuck it.
It's a good way to put it. And so when a band like Facing New York comes out, that's like proof of concept for us. And I think Styrofoam Walls is kind of the one of those top tier of like the early aughts progressive rock. It makes tons of sense.
And I still always do the Creed thing. I do my arms wide open every time it hits that big climax at the end.
It's pretty great. My best song, synonymous at this point, is the same thing. All of this.
Hey, man.
Here, if you were in our friend group, anyone who knew us at any point, like when that song comes on, everyone does
we're
the
all
claps
clapping.
And stomps.
I'm going to make this a little bit about myself. Default Americans, the clap. Mm-hmm. Absolutely influenced by all of this.
Oh, yeah. It's...
Oh, shit, man. I love the idea of you could have a clapping part that like people might get ingrained by. Like.
Here's the best thing I think Facing New York did, starting with Get Hot to Me, is they became a band where the core instrument of that band from then on is the drums. The drums are in that record, but like, am I right? Like, it's one of the few rock albums I can think of where if I wanted to define what a drum record is, that's it. Like every song is built around what the drums are doing, and everything else is kind of lending support, and all of this to me is like the centerpiece to that. And it's just a good song. It's all the things I think they do so well. It rips.
It travels really well to where it's not an orthodox structure behind the song,
right?
And it's again like Renee's gone at this point, and so now I think it was Matt Fozzi and Eric Frederick were kind of sharing duty on keys.
On the keys, right.
They execute it flawlessly.
Yeah, when the keys come in like that kind of chorus part. Mm-hmm. And
I like that you said that, kind of chorus part.
Right.
It's the only thing I have against that song is the title. I just hate the
All of it, yeah. Well, they don't title. Like how much gone or what is it?
Oh God, yeah. How gone, how gone am I gonna be long? And that song's so damn good, especially rhythmically. Again, another little drummer point of view. But all of this that's a great choice. I actually had in my notes to try to find a way to bring up all of this.
We have to say his name. We haven't said his name yet. Omar Cuellar.
Yeah.
I hope that's how I say his last name. Omar.
We're trying our best, yeah.
But the way that he translates the hand claps and stomps to the actual drum beat.
Yeah, when he hits the drum beat. Oh, man. It's
amazing.
It's incredible because it's not identical. Yeah.
People, are you listening to how exciting we're getting?
This is, again, Colton and I play drums. What would you have done? I would have done the exact same thing.
And he doesn't, and it's genius.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Brilliant,
it makes
brilliant
every part of that song feel like it does something new. And so you're discovering something every time.
Yeah. Wow. Great, great choice. I'm so glad you brought that in because I was concerned as to how we were going to bring up that song if it wasn't.
And I should say,
categories.
And like most things, I don't know if that is my favorite Facing New York song, but it's the one where this is usually how I discover best song for myself is it's the song we're after. It's usually one that I don't think of as my favorite, but I think, but shit, what else are you supposed to do?
I think you nailed it to where anytime we had our group of friends where we all were doing the clap right at the beginning of it. You know, Jory, it's just it brought us all together. It's like I think you were talking about it with Daft Punk, to where there was the one song where it's just you could see the group getting together and experiencing a moment at the same time.
Just like an entire generation of youth, just like yes. Like total revelation. Man. Okay.
Yeah. Excellent choice.
So much positivity. Worst song to me, Cutting My Hair.
That's an interesting choice. I don't dislike that song, and it was almost going to be my overrated song. Mm. But it is the weakest link on that album to me.
It's so, like, in an album that's so exciting, it's not exciting. I think towards the end, it moves into more interesting territory, but it's also, I think, one of the few missteps that the drummer Omar does. When he comes in on that second verse with, like, that really frantic snare stick work, and the chords are still, it's all still really slow behind it, it doesn't work to me. It's not a good, it's like a, I can see where the idea comes from, because towards the end of the song, that sicking, it's almost like it's kind of setting up what the end of the song does.
Yeah.
And they also do that thing that they do well in other songs. Again, you know me, if you're going to change keys, or if you're going to go from like a major to a minor, I just hate when it happens too much. And when they do that right before the chorus hits, I'm just like, ugh, I don't.
I can see how it's a little dull. Growing up, it does seem a little lazier, more on the lazy side. But hey, it was a tough one. I can't argue against you on this, but it was one that I'm like, I can't put it in there fully. There were just other songs that were.
I can see that. And the other thing I want to add is it's where I was talking about the lyrics. It's to me like maybe the worst offender on that record. It's a very kind of whiny song.
It is.
And like emo in a way that, I mean, who are you talking to? I'm like, give me all the sad, self-pitying emo I can get.
Sure.
But it's done in a really not super artful way. And it's got the lyric falling down. He's falling down.
I think it was kind of poised to be their single. And that's what kind of bothers me about the song, because it was a single, but it is the most single oriented. Like when I say single for listeners, like the most commercial.
Why Coheed has Blood Red Summer.
Yeah.
Right. Where that's like the most commercialized version of a band that is not very commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will be saying those statements again later on.
but what is your worst song?
Birth of Venus.
Mm.
It's basically a 4 minute and 49 second passing track, and I'm sure there's some sort of inside reason why he really digs it, but it's not utilizing Omar in the slightest, and it just never stops the entire song. And I get it, it's like there's a little bit of like mid-coitus, there's a little bit of that like sexualized romance behind it, and again, not in like as pervy a way as Alex Turner.
I'm re-listening to it as you're going. It's a very Minus the Bear-esque song. No,
yeah, it's just it doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, the painting Birth of Venus is wonderful.
I almost, here's the thing, I think you and I have very different opinions on Dogtown. Perhaps I can sense something
probably going here
because I really like that record, but
I don't dislike a single record by them, let me clarify.
I get it. But I actually liked where it was going with the initial group, but I see. Can we put a moratorium on, like, talking of like songs, like exploring sexuality and talking about it in a really healthy, positive way? I think it's great, but when that's the song is literally just about having sex,
and like, that's literally the thing,
that's it.
But I think there might be something deeper that Eric was talking about or writing
maybe
about.
Maybe to himself.
Well, again, it's the Birth of Venus. That's a like 1400s painting, to where it's the emergence of the goddess Venus coming out of the ocean and in full form. And I know just from seeing them, that's the last band I saw live.
Yeah.
It was Face of New York, and it was a great show. But it was right after Dogtown, so like 2018. And he was talking about how he was about to have twins.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe there is a connection between, you know, like sex and Birth of Venus is kind of like, hey, this is what it resulted in. So which can make it a much more complex idea. But I also really like Trouble. It seems like it's just sandwiched in between two songs that I really like off of that album.
I think Big Rev is the other, like, I'm having a baby song, which I think you know how I feel about I'm having a baby songs.
Yeah,
I agree with you. In fact, the more we're talking about, the more I'm like, oh, I thought I liked Birth of the Bean.
It's not god awful. And you know what? Default American does it all the time. It does sound a little jammy. Right? Where it's like, hey, you just play the beat back there and...
They were influenced by my friend Sam. They played with us and they were like, we should jam more.
We should do a little bit more of the jammy jammy.
I would put us jamming against anyone. I don't care. I love jamming with you.
I thought it was pretty fun.
So I think we're in a healthy place right now. Mm-hmm. I was worried. I think we're going to have some issues down the line. I think.
Again, worried and issues. Like, this might be 1 year of us recording together. If we haven't ruined it by now, I think we're doing good.
I did think that, I can't remember. See, that's how passionate I was about my opinion for Arctic Monkeys. I did think my opinion on best record for part one, Humbug. I thought that was going to break you.
Bah Humbug.
Bah Humbug.
It was tough. But, I mean, we're right around 1 year of recording together. I think I talk to you more, so that's making me like you more.
Well, okay. I was going to say, I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. I want to get
you
my
look
underrated.
Good.
Hey man, thank you. My right. Underrated is Gods of the Good Shit. One, such a good song. Or
it
title,
is a very good song.
But I and underrated because I guess I just never listened to Dogtown. I was like, okay, my Face in New York journey is over. Go with God, you're good. And I'd never heard that song. And during
I didn't
this
think
listen
they were
going to
release anything ever again.
I didn't either. And so I remember when Dogtown came out, it was not a big release, as I understand it. Like, it was not a, I don't know. But anywho, I think that song is great. And it's so unlike them in so many ways. It's actually, to me, one of the most straightforward songs they've made. But also, I was like, hey, this is...
It's very personal. I really respect that behind a tour. It's like, you can tell, when I say personal, it seems like it's what he wrote to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope. That's the case.
That's an up and down record, because like some parts of that record I'm like, is anyone going to check in on this guy? This is low. Yeah. But then it's also like a very like positive, filled with love. I was gonna say love born.
Well, and he utilizes something that I know both of us have liked to. It's that rhythm that he's playing, and how they utilize it is incredible, because he's doing the jan.
But the carry yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The carry. Exactly. But I mean, like, how he switches, or how they switch, like how they utilize the. Yeah. And then you walked in. Ooh. That happens a little before you would anticipate the resolve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very well executed. It's probably, in my estimation, that is their most commercial song.
Likely. I mean, it has like the doo doo. That guitar line I could have gone very wrong, but I think because the song doesn't ask a lot of you, mm-hmm. they keep it short, but it also on that record, I just think it works really well. I was surprised how well it worked. When I first heard it, I was like, oh, what have they done?
No, it is that, to where you don't hear you definitely get the rhythmic qualities of Face New York, but you don't get the like advanced musicianship that you might be more familiar with.
Yeah,
with Facing New York, it's a step aside, but that's again a compliment. Really, is I very much appreciate the fact that they can put on different hats and not seem out of place.
Most deaf.
Which, by the way, I have to ask you some questions about Most Deaf off air.
Oh my god, this off air, man, you have a really serious face.
Well, okay. you're gonna go on vacation, have some hosts that are going to fill in for you, and I want to talk
this.
About Most Deaf. All right.
We'll cover this. All right. You're underrated.
My underrated song. I have all of this written in as like a footnote, just in case it doesn't get mentioned.
Sure. Fair.
But it got mentioned. Full Turn. Full Turn is so damn good to me. I love the grin on your face. We might have some fun on the next category.
Possibly.
Full Turn, that's what turned me on to them.
That and guitar line is great. That opening.
One of the first riffs that I just learned listening to it. I was like, I'm going to put this on repeat, and I'm going to figure out how to play that riff. And I love the dramatic slowdown when he goes like, "What does he do with the degree from the universe?" And the drums with the little like chaotic, just love it. I love that song.
It's good. I'll just say it makes sense because we're talking about being underrated. Why is it underrated for you?
Underappreciated.
I could see that. Because I wanted Styrofoam to have Walls more. Is so strong.
Yeah, I want that one to have a little more of the limelight, but it just doesn't.
I have it as my overrated, and here's only reason. It's overrated because I remember when it came on and that guitar line came on. I hadn't heard it in a long time. I remember it from your MySpace profile, and it was one of the songs on their MySpace profile. It's amazing how my mind still works that way.
It's amazing you think of MySpace. You don't even do social media at all these days. So
MySpace was the pinnacle of social media for me. I'd have no other thing to go back to. But here's the thing, man. Those lyrics to me are so bad. And it's that like that movie theater, like, oh, my life's a movie theater. They're not good. That's the thing that got me where I was like, I didn't realize the lyrics were as bad as they are. But that's what I was talking about with when you have music that is reaching so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think lyrically, for it to work, you have to be willing to write in those abstractions. You have to have the ability to write in those abstractions because
I can respect that.
When you have a song where, like, trying to use that metaphor of like a life as a movie is already problematic enough. And then when you do it in a way that is so by the books, and it's just I don't know. It bummed me out because I still, like, when you talk about the guitar line, I still think it's like one of their best opening guitarists in a record that's more guitar driven.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I can't say that much on the lyrics. The best I can remember was, "What does he do with this degree from the university?" Which is really not that great a lyric. So I understand. But when I listen to the song, I'm hearing melodies. And so the lyrics are just so by the wayside. I don't really analyze the song that way. So I can respect that.
It's hard for me to say anything else about it because you're right. I actually think the melody works really nicely. And the way that I think that was part of Matt Fozzie's, I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, Fozzie, because it's Z's.
It never feels right to say Fozzie because I don't know if you know this. I'm a huge Muppets fan.
It sounds like I'm just talking about Fozzie Bear, which I'm sure he doesn't appreciate.
Which is the funniest bear. Can we all agree on this? There is no funnier bear. Yogi, go to the wayside. Nope. Yogi's not as funny as Fozzie.
Bill Winnie Murray and Fozzie, huh? Okay.
Yeah. This Cocaine Bear. Nope.
Ted from the movie Ted?
Ted. Nope. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
I'm out of bears. I don't have any. The talking bear from Dr. Dolittle 2, voiced by Steve Vaughn.
I'm a bigger fan of the original Dr. Dolittle. Nothing against you, Eddie Murray.
I've seen Dr. Dolittle 2. Like
Murphy.
Weirdly.
Eddie Murphy.
I think Eddie Murray is
a Baltimore Oriole fucking legend and Dodger legend.
We are so far off the rails. We got to come back. We got to come back, everyone.
I got the perfect comeback on this. Overrated song. Gods of the good shit.
Ah, really?
Yes.
Perfect. What are we doing? This is the second time this has happened.
Unintentional, but it's criminal that on Spotify, that song has over 2 million listens and not a single other song by them has even close to a million.
Was that their single for Dogtown?
Yeah.
I'm shocked they had 2 million people listen to that song.
Over 2 million and not a single other song is even coming close to 100,000.
It must have been on like criminal. A show or something. I can't imagine how else people.
I do not dislike this song. I really need to clarify that. But you want to talk about overrated. That's about as overrated can get.
Considering that it's based in New York, I agree with that.
I mean, like, for God's sake, listen to Roman Sun. That song to me should at least warrant 150,000 listens, and that's off of a freaking EP.
This is.
Yeah. So, I mean.
I think that's a great way to choose overrated.
Yeah. I don't dislike the song, but I was stunned looking at those numbers. That doesn't make sense.
2 million. Wow. As we talk about it, like, Based New York is one of those bands where I don't think I've ever met another person outside of our friend group that knows, cares about Based in New York. And that is not like there are obviously people who like Based in New York, who went to their shows and all that.
Yeah.
That's a clear thing. But I feel like they're one of those bands where I can talk about with some comfort saying they are about as small as you can get while still being able to play with like really well-known bands.
They might be our least known act that we've discussed.
Likely.
Yeah, it's like them, maybe Milk Carton Kids, but I think Milk Carton Kids has a larger following.
There you go. Yeah. People, we're bringing you the people you want to hear about.
Dude, Gods of the Good Shit, 2,332,696. Second, Cops on Bikes, 82,796. That's unbelievably wrong.
That's
everybody,
wild.
Everybody who is checking out this podcast right now because you love God of the Good Shit, Gods of the Good Shit, please go and listen to More Face in New York. There's some really good shit out there with them.
If we can do that for them, I would be happy.
Yeah, after okay. Hey, and then next year you guys come on the show.
Ooh, we could, yeah, that'd be great. So, let's go to the worst album, then right. The best. I love you.
I love you too, buddy. And I think we already know. It's by default that Dogtown's the worst album.
Is it because it just, when you listen to it, because the other two mean so much?
It's when you basically say it by default? That. Like, how impactful the first two are. I don't think Dogtown's a bad record at all. But it's just, it can never really live up to what those first two were for me.
I have as worst self-titled, Based in New York.
This is just, why not? Let's just, and here's, are we doing this?
Well, that's why when you kept talking about it in such glowing terms, I'm like, well, of course, because for him, it is so important. Yeah. And I totally understand this. I am, as you well know, I'm a holistic, like it's all got to work. Mm-hmm. And I think lyrically and thematically on that first record, I don't know, man. It doesn't quite work for me in a lot of ways.
That's fair.
And I think, to me, the band,
I think you've made
better.
Some enemies.
I feel it.
Some
feel
more.
Your,
just a couple. Yeah. Not me. I got your back, buddy.
I think they improve, like addition by subtraction. I think when they have less cooks in the kitchen, I think starting with Get Hot and Dogtown, I think that they are able to be a bit more creative with what they're doing in a way that I appreciated more.
See, and when it comes to Dogtown, it is so heavily utilized, the guitar and the bass playing the same thing, overly utilized to me. Like, there are certain songs that sound exactly the same the way they open. So I don't hear as much music creativity on Dogtown. I hear a little bit more of necessity. Let's make an album. All right, let's not worry too much about it, which can be a good thing.
Mm.
But, I mean, like, looking at the track list for Dogtown.
Okay.
Yeah, Big Rev, Hail Mary. I mean, I already said my thing about Birth of You. I think Trouble is an incredibly good song. Almost my underrated. But Shame.
Trouble's very good.
Yeah, Heaven is... But
Shame? Like, we don't like Shame? I mean, lyrically, again, I think it's a rough...
It takes a minute.
Anytime a lyric has like pre-cum in it, I'm always just like, okay, let's see where you're going with this.
Yeah,
and sure. I don't... and I didn't like where he went with it.
I think Shame starts off really rough, but I think the chorus is a really good, again, resolution to it. I think that's a really good melody. Mm-hmm. I'm going more off of when I hear the vocals, I hear the melody.
I mean, it's Soundgarden song. It's Soundgarden. There's actually weird, like I said, like 90s grunge, like all across that record. And that to me is the most Soundgarden-y song I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, but it feels like they kind of abuse that. And I don't know. I feel like there's a little bit of magic that's been lost by the time this record comes out. But again, that could be a just throwing back to our Arctic Monkeys. It's a biasness, not a bias. It's a biasness.
It's a biasness. I get that. Man, you're making me. Here's this may be the first time this has ever happened. As we're talking, you're changing my like. We're about to do best album, and I think you've changed my mind.
I like that.
I think you have, but I do still feel that worst for me has got to be the first one.
I got you.
I'm going to hold to that. So best.
All right. So we both have established our worst. Yeah.
Yours is Dogtown. Mine is self-titled. The best album is 1, 2, 3.
The first one. It's self-titled for me, man.
Well, now officially now, when we sat down on my notes, my best album says Dogtown.
Okay. That's fair.
It was the album that surprised me the most. I'd never heard it up until like 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah.
And when Dogtown comes in, I was like, ooh, I like this because It's their less their least proggy record, but it's also, I don't know, like to me, it's also then where they're exercising the most interesting songwriting.
I think
that being said, wait.
I was going to say, at this point in your life, of course that's your favorite album.
Well, okay, here's the thing. And now I have to explain this. And I really want to hear why. I think we'll, I want to close with you talking about the self-titled because you're on fire today.
Oh, thanks.
But when I heard Dogtown, I was like, this is like the mature face in New York that I think I needed.
Yeah.
And when I think back to it now, though, too many songs on that record, even though musically they work, again, lyrically and thematically, they're kind of bummers for me. Like Big Rev, it's just a, I'm about to have a baby. Yeah. And they wrote a boring song about having
Hail
a baby.
Mary is a really cool song. Like he said live that it was the day after Thanksgiving. They were in the park playing football, and then a couple of kids came and kicked their ass playing football.
Yeah.
Why do we need that song?
It's kind of like Fish, right? Where it's like a really great jam band, and they just like want to write songs about whatever. And yeah, you're like, it's okay, I think, to have songs that are goofy or have ideas where the premise is kind of comical. But then also, there's nothing else there. Like, it's so thin.
Using Hail Mary as an example, to where it's like, okay, it's a silly concept of a song. But the music gets intense and awesome and like almost Radiohead-esque. Like, when it hits this solo section at the end, I'm going, my eyes are wide, my ears are all in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did you guys make such an intense outro to this song about you playing football against some kids?
Can I think this is the...
Unless it was tackle. If it was tackle, then I understand.
This is the most critical thing I can say about Face in New York. And apologies, because I really do like them. That's
good
a bad.
Very, very good band.
I think musically, their artistry to me is like really profound in a lot of ways. But I don't think they have a lot of artistry with things outside of music.
Yeah.
Like thinking about thematically and like ideas and thinking lyrically, especially. Like when I say artistry, I mean the ability to like think about how you want to express something and do it in a way that is still engaging and compelling and finding like deeper connections to things. And they don't seem interested in that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, if they were to make a folk album, it would cut my ranking in half. I'm almost certain.
It would not be good.
Yeah.
And this is where we're talking about Dogtown, because my favorite record now I'm changing to Get Hot.
I got nothing against that.
Because you persuaded me. Because here's why I didn't have Get Hot as my favorite. Lyrically, to me, I think it is their best. And musically, there's so much cool stuff that happens on Get Hot that I love. I love Hardwood Floors. I love where there's just like, let's just make like a funk jazzy track in the middle of all this other stuff. And then
I remember describing Get Hot. And I mean, it's totally inaccurate, but this is how I described it back in, what year did this come out? In 2008?
Yeah.
It sounds like progressive 70s porn music.
Some of it, yeah.
But I thought it was so bold, the transition, because I do hold a little bit of a grudge against Face in New York. I would have loved to have seen some more albums that were like musical style of the self-titled.
Right.
But man, that transition... It's again, it's bold. It was brave. It's brazen, you know, triple B. You got the three B's, guys. But
and it's also the, as a record to me, it all really seems to be working together. Like they have the Get Hot reprisal, and that's one part of it. But it's also just, again, the more I think about it, the more the idea of how it's arranged, how it's all around the drum set is so cool. Like you can literally, it's like their live show. I think the only, and here's why I didn't have it initially as my favorite, that record, like in terms of the songs and like what they're about and the subject matter, to me it just hasn't aged well, because it is, at the time when we were in our 20s, that record to me is like the pinnacle of like white 20-year-old dude living in the Bay who's like kind of a hipster. Like
I thought for sure your favorite song was going to be Me and My Friends.
It's almost my overrated now, because when I listen to Me and My Friends now, at the time I was like, this is amazing that he is trying to, so he's encapsulating in such an amazing way.
And very honest.
That, 100%, right? That part of his life. And the thing is, if you lived in Oakland, there's so many dudes I know that are like that. And when I listen to it now, I'm just like, oh, this is embarrassing for that version of him. Because it's like, oh, I'm just trying to find love, fall in love with people in my text messages. And it's
Yeah. Oh,
as a
35-year-old,
I'm just like, ugh, I can't.
I do love the line stuck somewhere between my teens and my 30s, to where it is the 20s are a very immature time frame. So I, not that the teens aren't, but you know what I mean. Like, it's like he's trying to find his own ground, or even when he talks about you know, his girlfriend views me more as like a mentor or something like that. I can't remember. I view her more as a mother.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think while it is creepy, it's got like an honesty to it that I'm okay with.
I don't know if I think of it as creepy. Like, I, again, like you said,
you're
the
right.
Honesty.
Creepy might be too strong a word.
But the fearlessness of him capturing like all of like the idiosyncrasies and all of the anxieties of being a 20-year-old dude at the time, and I still think it makes it compelling. But initially, it's one of those things where when you listen to it now, it's like looking at an old photo of yourself, like, oh, that's how that's what we were all afraid of. Like, got to grow up, man. Got to be in positive relationships.
I'm actually trying to reinforce, and I think we both are trying to reinforce your selection, your change to Get Hot, because Gesture is a song that it's one of the best songs they've ever written. They're like, you make me feel so much. Like, and when it hits that, I'm like, it's one of my favorite lines to say about a song. I believe it. Like, I believe the energy that comes in. And I'm like, all right, that's like intense love. It's intense emotion.
The first, five tracks on that record are all.
Oh, yeah. Fire. Well, Cops on Bikes was seriously a game changer.
It's just the way that the drums open it. And like you said, it's like the statement that the rest of the record is going to be this way. And it comes together in such a clumsy way, almost, the way it starts.
Yeah, it's very, very like casual. It's kind of like chop, chop. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you get this like really gospel-y kind of chorus. I mean, quasi-gospel, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was always thinking like Rage Against the Machine-esque. I don't know why.
Interesting.
I don't know why I always thought that.
My only complaint about the entire album is on Give Love. I really, really hate the like, I won't give love, baby. That's the cringiest moment in all three albums for me. You didn't have to do that. But
that record
has
a lot of cringe.
Yeah, but I think there's a little bit of like owning it. So I can give him a lot of credit for like Eric Fredrickson is one of the most unique songwriters to me. And I'm okay with him staying in that element.
I remember at the time thinking I've been with girls and I ain't no boy as a really great lyric. And when I listen to it now, I'm like, that's
it's strange.
I don't know how I feel about any of that.
But you know what? On the plus side with Dogtown, it seems like he grew up. He grew out of it. He was growing with his music and just trying his best to be himself. Because I think that was probably the most difficult thing for Facing New York when it came to songwriting. It's like, oh, we can write all the music for sure. We can come up with a good vocal melody. The lyrics seem to be more the point of concern.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they express so much with their music that here's the thing. Don't you kind of wish they would just be an instrumental band?
No.
I wish they would.
What was that really popular instrumental band? Explosions in the Sky.
I was going to say, we opened for This Will Destroy You, but Explosions in the Sky was the bigger one.
Yeah. And the thing that always drove me crazy about Explosions in the Sky was there were no lyrics. There was no vocal melodies.
Well, because they're a very boring band. Did we say that? Is that going to hurt people's feelings?
You needed a front man. You needed
Explosions in the Sky was pretty boring.
Yeah. And we might, now I know both of us have offended some listeners. But I'm sorry, guys.
I would love to hear a Face New York instrumental record because they have such maturity with their music. And I don't know. That's weird. And I didn't even think that going into this recording. And now that we're talking about it, or I guess I'm literally talking about it, not you. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. I want to hear self-titled. You've talked a lot about why it's so great, but tell me why this was default. Was this automatic for you? Was Get Hot at all?
It was
threatening.
Get Hot. It was very close. It was very close, but I can't get over like We Are transitioning into Javelin. Cutting My Hair, I agree with you, is kind of the weakest link on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Full Turns and Apple Sugar Cider is one of the, like, if you're in a bad mood or if you just don't even know what mood to be in, if you're just like bland to start your day, throw on fucking Apple Sugar Cider. It's so wonderful.
And it is a way better version of what I think they're also kind of trying to do with Birth of Venus, at least thematically.
Yeah.
But it has, you're right, it's a very cozy song.
Yeah, exactly. Cozy is the right word. That's cozy. Like rainy day, just, you know, like I'm just trying to relax. Let me snuggle up and with a good book.
Yeah.
Flagstaff is cool. I like Tip of the Iceberg. I understand where you're coming from. And then, of course, Styrofoam Walls, Fly on the Wall, Butterfly Clock is such a good outro.
That final three, it's their best, like...
sequence.
Yeah, that sequence is... That is the best songwriting I think they've done, is the way they make those three work.
Yeah, and it was just... For me at the time, and it just... It's aged art tour. It's like seeing how art grew up, I still feel like it's just as good now as it was then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just have no complaints. And again, I know that there can be kind of the divide between you and I is like emphasis on lyrics, which I don't think there's a right or wrong when it comes to that. But everything that happens on it, I like I said before, I do my Creed's arms wide open, just like, oh man, I'm like in the middle of playing pool, listening to this album. All of a sudden I'm not taking the shot just yet. I have to like absorb the moment and do the, put my chin up in the air and smile, all that good shit.
I mean, that's just like the bonds that you make with art and music, mm-hmm. especially I think when you're younger.
Yeah.
Like what's stronger than that, right? Like no one's going to convince someone that their favorite record from high school isn't this most amazing thing, because that's, God, for a lot of people, like I know for you and me, it's just how you formulate yourself based off of all of that. It's really cool.
There are just people that there's no way, for as much as I will try, there's no way I could convince them that Hawthorne Heights is not a good band.
Yeah. They had a lot of guitarists.
Take that, Hawthorne Heights, for no reason.
They had a lot. I remember it was like they had four guitarists on. I was like, where?
Yeah. That was... Sorry to anybody who likes Hawthorne Heights. So it just I'm dragging you down with me in case you don't like the self-titled Facing New York album.
Hey, how dare you, by the way. But I do want to say, only because I was having this really great talk with my wife. We watched Past Lives last mm-hmm. night, which was a really cool movie. But we're having this talk about like art that we engage with, and it got to a point where like all these movies that we've been watching recently, like kind of going through some Oscar nominees, but also just other movies that we've been kind of into.
Gotcha.
And I don't think I've watched a movie this year where I'm just like, oh, it's perfect. I haven't done that in a long time, where you just watch something, you're like, oh my God, that was amazing. But yeah,
you're talking brand new movie, like some new.
Brand theme. New, or even some older ones that we've kind of gotten a hold of. What I've come to like kind of realize more, I think in my 20s, and probably before that, I was so obsessed with finding the big, perfect piece of art that everyone would be in on. And like, I feel like that's still kind of the way our culture works, right? The thing that everyone just deems as the masterpiece, it's flawless. And it's all that or nothing.
And I know I'm victim to that mentality.
I mean, I think it's a very natural thing to want to see what the pinnacle of creativity produces, and for everyone, hopefully, to agree with it. Yeah. But as I've gotten older, I realize one, that just doesn't work. But also, I'm way more comfortable now with like things that I'm excited to see or whatever being really flawed and not, you know, not fulfilling whatever potential I think they have, and recognizing that that's the whole point. Like that, like when I listen to Face in New York and I have all these thoughts about, ooh, I don't like, you know, this or that. But also, everything about that record is from who they are and what, you know, what they're capable of and all these things. And so the same part that makes the lyrics for a lot of these songs not work for me, that same creativity is what produces all of this amazing music and arrangements and things. And I think having it be, to me, a really like flawed, like no one of the records to me is perfect. Like almost knowing, I'm like, oh, it's just not quite. That's still, I think, kind of the point. It's really beautiful.
I mean, I couldn't say it better. So I'll just tell the listener, keep that in mind when you listen to a particular podcast. There can be flaws.
This is the only thing that's all the reason I brought that up. Aren't flaws great?
Everyone? Flaws are wonderful. Like anytime you hear us get information wrong or say something dumb, it's the creative process that just exists within Colton and I.
I think let's do this. We'll take a break and just sit here and stare at each other and do nothing else and talk about nothing else.
Yeah, that's all we're going to do.
And we'll come back, we'll do the ratings, and then I'm just realizing something now that I'm having a bit of a panic.
No, you don't have a selection?
Okay, let's take a break. Let's take a break.
Take a break.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
All right, we're back. Thank you, Leo. Everybody, definitely check out The Chit Show. It's wonderful and probably better than our show. So
likely, who knows?
Probably a little more prepared.
Definitely white. A lot of stuff. I have nothing. I have something.
I got nothing against you. I've been in that situation, and I think we're going to fight our way through this.
This is like pure panic. Listener, I'm just going to be transparent about this. It's my turn to have a band. And
yes,
I remember sometime early in the week, I was like, who am I going to choose? And like having some rough ideas and then nothing. Crickets.
What's funny is I always get really nervous because I think you throw the most curveballs for that.
And I had bands that I were likely would be curveballs, let's say, but this is a like fastball down the middle. Like we're talking about
like 80, like an 88 mile per hour fastball down the middle to where I can definitely hit it. The catcher's
possibly
telling
a
me
Dan
fastball
Heron,
coming down the center.
Dan Heron, 88 miles per hour fastball. I know because
Dan Heron.
Well, his Twitter handle used to be I throw 88.
Okay. All right.
And that was
he
like
pitched for the Angels, right?
And the Dodgers.
And the Dodgers. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
With the anywho, everyone.
Sports talk.
Has anyone talked about Dan Heron on a music podcast before? I love you, Dan Heron. I remember him throwing a fastball down the middle during a playoff run, I think it was. I can't remember who it was. It was like a really good hitter in the other team. And I remember thinking, that's like the most courageous thing I've ever seen.
It was probably Barry Bonds, because didn't he pitch for the 2002
Angels? No, he's not that
Angels?
Old. Maybe. But this is when he was past his prime, and he just threw like an 88, and he got by the guy. He struck him out. And I remember thinking, I think I tweeted it. I was like, that's the bravest thing I've ever seen.
Wait, you tweeted something?
I tweeted something about Dan Heron.
So we got MySpace and Twitter. All right.
This is amazing. All right, let's do our rankings.
All right.
And then I totally have a band to talk about. I want you to go first.
Just to make it, I'll be the good guy. Good cop, bad cop. Here we go. So I gave Haim 8,
yeah,
which I still am completely behind.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving Facing New York an 8.5.
Are you realizing there was some inflation maybe? Or no, you think
it's how impactful they were. I can't let go of
it. For you to give them anything lower, I would be surprised. I think that makes sense.
So I mean, so now my three highest ratings are Modest Mouse at 9,
mm-hmm,
Face in New York at 8.5, and Haim at 8.
December's wasn't in the 8?
Maybe.
If I'm keeping track, which makes sense for me, very on brand, it's Decemberists, Vampire Weekend, and Modest Mouse.
Yeah.
And we're already tracking my top three. You know, that's that makes I have to put them lower
than 8.5. That makes sense. You're always lower than me, typically.
But
I think Modest Mouse, I think you might have been higher than me.
To me, it's like a 6.75.
Woo!
Out of 10.
Damn.
Because I want it to be closer to a 7, but man, I have bands that I know I've done in the 7. And by everybody, how arbitrary are these numbers? Who cares, right?
Yeah, for the most part, really.
But we don't care.
This is just kind of an element of the show.
6.75-ish yellow-green. That's
especially when Colton gives Facing New York a 6.5, whatever.
I'd give him a 7 and be comfortable.
That really makes the ratings not matter.
Oh my God. Well, now it's time for me to tell you what band we're listening to. And this band has more records. I'll actually go ahead and tell you. They have officially, although everyone calls their first record a record, I just refuse to believe it is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 official records.
Okay.
I actually think technically they had a 9th one that was supposed to come out or did. I don't know. I have no idea. This is a band that I have loved, and then I've gone on to realize, wow, what the heck happened? This is like a head scratcher band. Maybe as close to Weezer as it gets with what happened.
Okay. Is that my first hint?
It's your, I'm setting the stage for you. I'll also tell you, I don't know if this gets too into the weeds. You'll know now. We've covered this band.
Wait, we've slightly discussed them.
We've covered, you and I have covered musically this band. I'm not going to say we played at a show or a practice or whatever, but we've done those things.
Okay. Like I might know. But...
So,
say anything.
Oh, you got it. Yeah. I was going to give you a clue. I couldn't think of a clue because every clue I was going to give you would be too obvious. We're by, Molly. Nope. You got it. Belt. Yep. Nope. You got it. Yep. So okay. Here's what I want to do. 8 records officially. The 9th one, again, I don't even know if it came out, but I do not even for fun, want to talk about their last 4 records. Like, not even a little bit.
Yeah, there definitely will not be a part due.
No, I can't. And because literally there'll be nothing I have. I'll likely talk about them anyway during the episode. Mm-hmm. I have nothing nice to say about any of those. Like, oh my God. But
I understand. But the 3.
I want to do Is a Real Boy, 2004. Mm-hmm. In Defense of the Genre, 2007, which is a double up record anyway, so we're getting to some. And then Say Anything, the self-titled, 2009. So okay. 3 records, now, everybody.
Is a Real Boy and Was a Real Boy? Can we combine those two?
Let's do it.
Yeah, because I really, I mean, I won't give anything
I will talk about them separate. I think, well, we can get into this. I will look at It Was a Real Boy as a separate release from Is a Real Boy.
Okay.
Like, I do not want them to be together in my brain.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah. But let's listen. So Is a Real Boy and Was a Real Boy, everybody. In Defense of the Genre, and then the self-titled. Those are the releases that we're going
to
talk about.
All you need to listen to as well.
Yeah, and literally, like, and not even most of what we're going to talk about, but all I feel responsible telling people to listen to.
Yeah, I like that. Good choice. I know you really thought this out.
I know.
I'm being the clown. I'm sorry.
Anywho, everybody, we're excited. And enjoy the Super Bowl, which has happened already. So
you already know who won. I was right or wrong.
More importantly, I think by the time this comes out, spring training has begun.
That's right. That's right. And so, regardless, I can tell you this much about the Super Bowl. I really don't like the team that won.
That's fair. You always did have a problem with the... You always did.
I know it. I know it. I'm going to just, like, put fart noises every time. All right, Colton, I love you, dude. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Tune in with us next week. We'll talk about it. Say anything.
All right, everybody. Bah, bah.
Face blown. Face blown.